she said basically she was approached by Navigator to help, you know, sit on one of these things.
Navigator asked her to sit on one of these boards for Hockey Canada.
A Canadian Olympic champion says she was asked to sit in a Hockey Canada oversight committee, but the offer was withdrawn after she lobbied for leadership change. She said she was approached by the high-profile PR firm Navigator and was asked to be a member of a special committee of independent experts tasked with monitoring and providing guidance on Hockey Canada's previously announced plan.
Let's talk about that tactic for just one second, because it's such an effective and interesting one. Rather than the typical response that, you know, you might take when you feel like you're being unfairly scandalized, say this isn't really a scandal, or we don't take this seriously, or this never happened. You're taking all that energy and you're accepting it and absorbing it. You're saying, yes, there's something really important here, and no one is more concerned than we are, and we are going to get to the bottom of it, and we are striking this independent committee. And really what you're saying is, like, we're going to do such a good job of this, you don't have to keep looking at us, but you do get to control. And look what happened there. Navigator reaches out to somebody, asks her to be on the committee, and she tries to engage with it in a legitimate way and say, the leadership of this committee needs to change.
The leadership of this organization needs to change.
She says, as a member of this committee, I advise that the leadership of Hockey Canada needs to change. And they say, sorry, that's not the advice we were looking for. And she's shown the door.
I mean, another considerable one was the convoy occupation. So this was obviously the big convoy occupation of Ottawa in February 2022, where they advised the Ottawa Police Service, which was reported at the time. But a lot of the details of the extent of their involvement came out earlier this past year in the report of the Public Order Emergency Commission that sort of questioned, well, one, whether Navigator should have been given, had so much influence, but more to the point, whether there was at least a perception that the Ottawa police chief at the time, Peter Slowly, may have placed an undue emphasis on how things and how his own reputation appeared, as opposed to how to actually manage the situation in the best interests of what would have to happen.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Slowly. You recognize the importance of communicating and messaging, correct? That's an important obligation that you have as a chief, and it's important that you communicate appropriately both in the service and externally to the service, correct?
Yes, sir.
And in that regard, you retained a company called Navigator to provide strategic communications and issues management advice related to the Freedom Convoy from January 30th.
They were procured to support the Ottawa Police Service and the Ottawa Police Services Board, yes, sir.
We know they provided services to you. They even prepared a report for you on what your reputation was.
They prepared general reports that covered a range of topics, including general trust of the Ottawa Police Service. And yes, they broke it down in some cases to assess trust in the chief of police.
And there was a specific report, actually, about your reputation. OPS spent $185,000 on Navigator providing communication advice for the period of January 30th to February 15th.
That's one worth talking about for a second, because there were like two things about that that were so weird. The whole country was watching the Ottawa police to see, like, what's going on there? How are you letting this go on? What are you going to do about this? And then we find out that they're like hiring a PR firm to navigate their public image.
Yeah.
That seemed like that's not what we want you to be thinking about right now. But then the other implication that was concerning was not just that you're worried about your brand, but that you're letting the advice...
That you're letting your concern about your brand dictate the action that you take.
That Navigator is actually maybe even like influencing or like controlling what course of action the police...
I don't think they're controlling, but here, let me read you what Justice Rouleau wrote in his report as one of the issues. He called decision-making in communication unduly influenced by extraneous considerations.
Undue influence.
The Ottawa Police Service and the Ottawa Police Service Board were entitled to utilize crisis management communications experts or strategists to assist them with messaging. However, several meetings involving the OPS chiefs, Peter Slowly, and external communications advisors from Navigator Limited and or Advanced Symbolics, which is another company, appear to have morphed into operational discussions that considered which decisions would best address reputational concerns about the OPS and Chief Slowly. Chief Slowly should have been far more careful to avoid even the perception of operational or tactical decisions tied to reputational concerns.
Yeah, it's one thing to bring in PR people for like, okay, we now know what we're going to do. How are we going to convey it to the public? But Navigator seems to have had a seat at the table when actually deciding on operational decisions.
Yeah, there's another moment in, let me pull up the other volume. One of the deputy chiefs testified that Chief Slowly involved Navigator in operational discussions during the conference, including discussions in which Navigator advocated for more active enforcement measures In one instance, Navigator Limited's principal entered the deputy chief's office uninvited and told him that the OPS should take more active enforcement measures at the National War Memorial.
One of the higher-ups at Navigator, who at this point in the relationship with Peter Slowly feels comfortable walking into his office uninvited.
Or into the deputy chief's office, even.
And saying, here's how we should handle the Freedom Convoy protests. We need to take more action right now.
Or, yeah, here's what you need to do. You should be more active in getting protesters away from the War Memorial.
So who's calling the shots is a legitimate question to ask in that instance.
No, it's not even so much who's calling the shots is why are they giving suggestions about what shots to be called?
So that's like a tail that wags the dog kind of a thing when the optics actually determine the course of action.
And there's one more story where they played a significant reported role this past spring, and that was the story of Chinese foreign interference.
Breaking news, Special Rapporteur David Johnston has submitted his resignation to the Prime Minister for his role in leading the hearings and inquiry and review of public interference in Canadian elections.
The latest controversy was unfolding this week with the Navigator, right, a crisis management firm that he had hired for a period of time. And then the Globe and Mail came up with a story saying that Navigator had also at one time had the client of Han Dong, an right, independent MP, who this report looked into.
Now that one, I think, hit in the same way of like, you are supposed to be this unimpeachable. The whole point of Trudeau appointing a special rapporteur is that we're going to depoliticize this question. We're going to hand this off to somebody with an unimpeachable reputation who's going to get to the bottom of this and take this away from this vulgar partisan fight and care about what happened, not the optics of what happened. And then you find out that the guy has enlisted Navigator to stick handle, I guess, his public image as he carries out his function as a special rapporteur. But that wasn't the end of it. And this is a case where Navigator's involvement actually ended up changing the...
That's how it appears. So David Johnston's office, the special rapporteur, had hired Navigator to provide communications advice and support around the production of their report and their work. And so the Globe got a tip. The Navigator had also been doing work for Han Dong earlier in the year, Han Dong being the current independent former Liberal MP who was one of the subjects of David Johnston's investigations in terms of like trying to figure out whether certain allegations about him.
Jonathan, let me hit pause on that for a second because it is so absurd to think that David Johnston has the job of finding out whether or not Han Dong actually was the target of foreign interference, whether or not MP Han Dong actually did the bidding of Beijing, whether or not these media reports about Han Dong are accurate or not. That's David Johnston's job. And he hires Navigator to handle his public image and his appearance of neutrality as an honest broker. Han Dong is facing his own crisis that he's the target of these accusations, and he too hires Navigator. And this brought up something that we've talked about in the newsroom, which is, you know, when you call up a lawyer, the first thing they do when you ask a lawyer for advice is they say, I have to run a conflict check. I can't represent you if I'm representing somebody else, another interested party in this conflict, either the person who you're going against. And sometimes they'll put up firewalls so that the same firm can handle this. But that's the first question that they ask. And there's, of course, a law society that governs these things. What regulations govern an industry like crisis communications?
What the Special Rapporteur's Office told the Globe and Mail was that the first time he'd heard of any relationship between Navigator and Han Dong was when he received the Globe and Mail's questions, and that under the circumstances, he decided it would be best to end Navigator's engagement with their team. So neither Navigator nor Han Dong confirmed anything for the Globe, but the Special Rapporteur's Office told the Globe that Navigator has confirmed that it was never working for Han Dong and the independent Special Rapporteur at the same time.
At the same time. But the information you get from your first file, conceivably, at least that's known to Navigator when they embark upon their second file.
Conceivably.
Jonathan, how long after that was it that David Johnston stepped down as Special Rapporteur?
So that happened on Thursday, June 8th. On Friday, June 9th, David Johnston did what he had previously said he would not do and stepped down.
He resigned.
I will say that Navigator has told me that we have a conflict management process in place to ensure our legal and ethical obligations are adhered to and the trust clients put in Navigator is always respected.
So they're saying, trust us, we have internal policies about this.
They're saying they do have a conflict management process.
It's pretty wild to think that the sensitive information that Han Dong, especially if Navigator says, you need to tell us everything you did if we're going to help you here. So they know everything that Han Dong didn't do or did do if he was being a good client. And then the same with David Johnston. The same company is trying to advise both of these people through their respective trials and tribulations. And we have to trust them that they're not going to use information from one file to help their case on the other file because we trust Navigator.
The language says instead they aspire to the highest professional standards and they value integrity. We pride ourselves in our character. Our clients and employees know to expect truth and fairness at every turn.
Jonathan, this may sound juvenile, but I've often thought of Navigator as being like Joker to our Batman in journalism or something like that. Like, we are both doing work about public information, but our job is to find the truth and tell it. And their job is often to keep the truth from the public. Or to
assist their clients to move past a situation where the truth, if presented in a certain way, might not be good for them.
Well, there's a couple things that they do. One of which is like, well, forget what the media is saying about you. Let's get a better story out there. Let's get a more favorable story out there. But there is a part of what they do that is about directly getting in our way. Right?
Yeah,
it's about shaping a narrative like there's a journalist out there who's trying to expose you for doing X. We need to stop that narrative. We have a toolkit of tactics and strategies. And I often feel like we are pitted against them, or they pit themselves against us in our desire to get the truth out there.
Maybe. Potentially. It can happen. I mean, you know, as Kevin Donovan, I think their first thing is like convince the journalist something is not a story. And the second thing is try to get ahead of it. And so there are a lot of ways that you can try to kill a story. There are a lot of ways through simple persuasion. It's like, hey, look, this thing is not as weird or as bad or whatever as you think. And there are ways that you can kill a story just by planting another story that's the same subject that's maybe slightly more favorable in its framing in another place. And it may or may not kill it, but it'll set the tone, get ahead of it, set the tone first, right?
It's not that complicated. We're trying to give birth to stories and they try to kill stories, right?
They try to shape stories.
I mean, we serve very different interests. I mean, ideally, I know that we don't always function in the ideal sense, but ideally journalists serve the public. Who does Navigator serve?
The idea is to represent and to serve people who have or believe they have a lot of things to lose, as well as the means to pay quite a bit to ensure that they do not lose those things.
I have always thought of them as a creature of the elite, of the establishment.
Yeah.
In Canada, and so tight with the elite and the establishment in Canada.
So Jamie Watt just published a book last month called What I Wish I Said, Confessions of a Columnist, which is a compilation of his weekly Toronto Star columns over the previous, like, he's been a Star columnist on a weekly basis since, like, fall 2016. This is, like, 50 of those columns, as well as his own assessments of and rebuttals to them in retrospect. The book has blurbs, as lots of books do. This opens with page after page of blurbs, and among those blurbing are a former Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney, two former national news anchors, Peter Mansbridge and Lisa Laflamme, the publisher of the Toronto Star, Jordan Bitov, the publisher of the Globe and Mail, Philip Crawley, six former premiers of Ontario spanning three political parties, so everyone from David Peterson up through Kathleen Wynne, a former BC premier, a former Quebec premier, two former Alberta premiers, assorted, you know, Rick Mercers, and a guy named Bob Dylan, but not that Bob Dylan.
Jonathan, when I saw that list of big Canadian names blurbing his book, I thought, what does this actually mean? What is he trying to convey here? Because, like, no one's going to buy your book because Brian Mulroney gave you a blurb. But it is really weird to see that you've got politicians on the left and the right blurbing your book, that you've got newspaper publishers from rival newspapers, mm-hmm. that everybody, you know, Mansbridge and everybody in the media, everybody in the power elite of Canada is sort of like, what the message to me was, I am a very big deal. I am very well connected.
Yeah, and the book's foreword is by Andre Pratt, who is a former longtime columnist and editorial writer at La Presse and was a former senator. And the book's afterword is by Michael Cook, who's a longtime former editor-in-chief of the Toronto Star and also now works at Navigator.
Michael Cook, who I worked with, who I worked under when he was the editor-in-chief of the Toronto Star, locking horns with Navigator over the Gomeshi case. What does he do? He goes to work for Navigator after he's done with the Toronto Star. This impresses upon me just Navigator as a vector of power. And I've never understood why we in journalism, who have to get through Navigator to get the truth out, are so welcoming. And this is a book collecting his Toronto Star essays. Jonathan, as a publisher of news content in Canada, I'm often inviting people onto our platform to co-host Shortcuts or whatever mm-hmm. else. I'll just speak personally. I don't know what the Star is thinking, but in a million years, I would not invite a spin doctor for the elite to come and opine on the topics of the day. I would be terrified. I don't know who has paid them. In fact, they're not allowed to tell me who has paid them. That's their code of ethics, is that they have clients in the public eye, people who I am trying to report on as a journalist, and their job is to spin narrative for those people. That's the last person that I would let onto my platform. I mean, how does the Toronto Star know when Jamie Watt, over the years, is opining on the politics of the day, who has paid Jamie Watt? I mean, I would worry that the PR spin doctor who I'm letting onto Canada Land is selling their access to my audience to their clients.
I mean, in practice, I doubt it's that simple. It's more the prominence of being a Toronto Star columnist, I think. He certainly seems genuinely proud of that. What I can say is he started after he was invited by, what he wrote in his book is that after he was invited by John Hondrick, who was the longtime chairman of Toronto
Star.
What
is the story there? So John Hondrick asked him to be a columnist at the Toronto
Star? That's what he writes. It's plausible. Basically, they were starting up a new politics page at the time. They had wanted a liberal NDP and conservative voice. He maybe was just the first conservative who came to John Hondrick's mind.
But he doesn't work for the Conservative Party. He works for whoever will pay him.
Well, politically, he is a prominent conservative, a capital C conservative, and does work for conservative parties. The company work is much broader. And so the column seems to have basically sort of stayed going, outlived the politics page. He's a regular weekly or biweekly columnist with a headshot. And it says, of course, you know, he's a conservative strategist and executive chairman of Navigator Limited.
When you work for Hockey Canada or you work for Jean Gomes, no, you're not being a conservative strategist. I mean, does the Toronto Star know who he works for? Have we asked them that?
We got some insight in a couple months ago when he wrote a story about transportation policy in Toronto in the midst of this mayoral by-election. But the column itself didn't disclose that he'd been an advisor for one of the candidates from the mayor, a councillor named Brad Bradford.
Well, that sounds exactly like what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, in this case, we got some insight into what happened from the public editor of the Toronto Star, Donovan Vincent, who wrote a couple weeks later that, well, actually, in this case, someone in Jamie Watt's staff had told the Star that, oh, that he's doing for Bradford. Maybe a line disclaimer should be added at the end. But it was the editor who made the call that because the column wasn't name-checking mayoral candidates or advocating for or against anyone, that it wasn't necessary. But the editor, you know, recognizes now that that was the wrong call. There's a lot of questions about how the Star makes this work, because as you noted, you know, this company has a lot of clients. We don't know who most of those are, but as one example, when I was, you know, was working on my email to the Star for comment just a few hours ago, I just thought, like, oh, maybe I'll give an example of this. So I just pulled up, like, what were his recent columns? It touches on electric vehicle battery subsidies and the mining resources. Let's just see what we do know about Navigator. And so the most reliable way to find out who they're working for is go to lobbyist registries, which, once again, small portion of their business, but there are stuff there. And, okay, oh, here's a company called Northern Graphite that they're lobbying both the Ontario and federal governments for that specifically makes components for electric vehicle batteries. Is that a conflict? I mean, it's more of a question of, like, is that something the Star ought to have known or considered, and how does that work? So, yeah, Bruce Campion-Smith, the Toronto Star's editorial page editor, just, you know, got back to me to tell me that, you know, we expect all of our columnists to identify any potential conflicts of interest in the topics they choose to write on. But I guess it's one of those things that just points to stuff we talk about all the time on all of our various shows here about how Canada is this place that is big geographically, but not that big socially or politically, right? It really is run by this relatively small, relatively tightly knit group of people and institutions and corporations that all kind of know and maybe even respect each other. And within those elite circles, within that sphere, Navigator has very much established itself as the place you turn to when you can't afford to lose any of that.
That is your Canada Land episode. You can email me. My email address is jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. I do. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website, come have a visit, sign up for our newsletter. We're at canadaland.com. This episode was reported by our news editor, Jonathan Goldsby. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Additional production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I am your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication's handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
never begun, but forever before. Been using up life like I knew I had more. One breath at a time. The only one there. Another day to be alone in. Another lake to throw a stone in.
This is Bird Note.
Summertime.
It's just a few weeks past the solstice, and the real heat of summer is yet to come. Some shorebirds are already on their way south, but most songbirds will be here for a while longer. What's the best time of day to look for them? Well, many birds are most active in the morning, not long after sunrise, taking advantage of the abundance of insects at that hour. As summer waxes and temperatures rise, midday heat sends people inside, and birds take a siesta too. And then, both birds and bugs rev up again in the late afternoon. In the early morning, and again near dusk, just about the time mosquitoes are biting, that's when birds are busiest. One exception is gulls. You'll see them soaring and feeding throughout the day, because their preferred foods, whether a salmon fry or a French fry, are available all day long. Hummingbirds are out and about too, because their frantic metabolism requires that they feed almost constantly. But mostly, midday is a quiet time for birds. Are you looking for birds this summer? The cooler parts of the day are the best for a stroll and best for watching birds.
Summertime. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.